With game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Celtics and Raptors just over 24 hours away from its scheduled tip, the possibility of players boycotting the game continues to remain on the table. The Milwaukee Bucks are boycotting game five of their series against the Orlando Magic. This game is not happening.
Not only a message to America and not only a message to the world, but it's a message to Wisconsin.
A player's decision. They made this decision to boycott this game. This is a moment in time, a moment in history. We have never seen this in professional sports.
I do not think that the Milwaukee Bucks will be the only team to boycott, Rachel. I don't see how the Milwaukee Bucks could be the only team.
The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets will not be playing their game.
You will not see any basketball tonight. I think the better question now is, when are you going to see basketball again?
You haven't seen anything like this in the modern era. It's one thing to raise a lot of noise. It's another thing to refuse to play the games. This is a different level. This is a different ball game right here.
Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. It has indeed been an extremely eventful 24 hours for the NBA and professional sports in general since we first learned about the Bucks boycott and ultimately the NBA's postponement of yesterday's games during our show. NBA champions Matt Barnes, Richard Jefferson are joining me. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reports that players decided, guys, this morning they do want to resume the playoffs. Talks are now underway on when that will be. Today's three games have postponed, we know that. But the NBA said in a statement less than an hour ago that it was hopeful that games would resume either Friday or Saturday. Now, after a meeting between the players in the bubble this morning, there is another one set for today to discuss next steps between a group of players and the team governors representing the 13 teams in Orlando, along with representatives from the Players Association, the league office, Michael Jordan, who chairs the NBA's Labor Relations Committee. His team, not still in the bubble, but he will also be on the call, according to the league's statement. The discussion is expected to include plans of action on social justice issues. So, look, guys, this is a historic moment in time. You both have played in the league a very, very long time. And I assume, Richard, we'll start with you. You've never seen anything like this.
No, I don't think anyone's seen anything like this in any sports. And I as much as I want to, you know, applaud the NBA players, I also want to applaud athletes from all sports because so many sports have taken notice. They have jumped on board. They've been a part of this movement because this is something that impacts you. It doesn't matter if you're a basketball player. This impacts every community across this country and a lot of communities across the world. So I was just honestly the part that I was, you know, most impressed with is that, you know, the baseball players and then, you know, I believe hockey's not playing games today or tomorrow. So I think that was the thing that really kind of made the message stand out.
And also, I think they realize, too, their message is so much stronger coming from that bubble. Like we said, obviously, LeBron will still be heard. Chris will be heard. But would Doc Rivers' plea have been heard? Would George Hill's plea have been heard? Together, obviously, in that bubble, their message is a lot stronger, and it travels the world. And then, like Rich says, I think more than anything yesterday, we showed how powerful we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to welcome in Adrian Wojnarowski from the NBA bubble at Walt Disney World Resort. Woj, how did we get from such an emotional meeting last night where there didn't seem to be total consensus leaving that meeting to what seemed like a fairly quick decision this morning? What can you share about the players' mindset?
Well, Rachel, and I think Matt just made that point that ultimately the players decided that, listen, they know they had a dramatic impact. They've had a dramatic impact by pausing, boycotting the games yesterday. The games obviously aren't going to be played today, but I think the question of if we walk away from the season, if we leave the bubble, can we continue to have that dramatic of an impact on the issues that they are focused on right now? And the answer to that ultimately as a group was no. And from last night's meeting here in the bubble, you know, there were a lot of conversations among elite players in the league deep into the night. And then through today with owners and the league office and the Players Association before they even got into that 11 a.m. meeting here. And once they got there, Rachel, you know, I was told that Chris Paul, Andre Iguodala, obviously Chris Paul, the head of the Players Association, and Andre is one of the vice presidents, you know, they really took charge of that meeting and really kind of pushed through to players, guys. We're here to try to return to this season. We need to play. It's important. I think they believed you know, from last night to today that for the most part, you know, they had consensus of their peers that they wanted to move forward. They got the vote through, and now the season resumes very likely on Saturday, I'm told.
That's interesting. And you're reporting overnight about players talking late into the night. LeBron James, some of the other key players, senior guys around the league is so fascinating to me because, of course, that could only happen in this bubble situation. Them sitting at those, you and I know them well, those metal tables outside with the chairs and just sitting around face to face in a way. If these guys were all playing playoff games in separate cities, they would not be able to do. They also wouldn't be able to do what's happening later today, which is a meeting between some of the player designees and the team owners of the 13 teams still left in Orlando. Michael Jordan also going to be in attendance. What do you expect to happen during that meeting?
Well, I think that they're going to continue the conversation that they've been having all the way back through this entire pandemic and the hiatus and the conversations that the league and the players had about coming to Orlando, about having a bubble, and the issues that that players and coaches who had been on board with their players throughout, that they wanted to continue to shine a light on, to continue to keep in the forefront, and wanted to see commitments from ownership in the league about supporting those issues of social injustice. The league has done, I think, a great deal to do it. I think there's hope that they can do more. And you saw with the Bucks yesterday that they didn't just boycott the game and file out of the arena and go back to their rooms. They sat in that locker room for hours. They used their ownership group with Mark Lazary, his son Alex Lazary, to get them the lieutenant governor, the attorney generals of Wisconsin, on the phone and start to formulate a plan about how they could achieve the goals for justice that they wanted to impact. And I think you're going to see that asked of more organizations, more teams in the league. You saw today the Houston Rockets are going to use their arena as a voting center in November for the election. You're seeing more and more teams do that around the country, especially at a time in cities where there are concerns about voter suppression, and using those facilities, you know, to be able to impact a fair election process.
Absolutely. Woj, thank you so much for keeping us updated. I know the story is going to continue to develop, so we will see you later on throughout the network, throughout the day.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. All right, guys, this is, of course, not the first time that NBA players have used their platform to protest. In 1961, Bill Russell and a few of his Celtics teammates boycotted an exhibition game in Lexington, Kentucky, after a hotel restaurant refused to serve them just because they were African-American. In 1991, a few months after Rodney King was beaten by white police officers in L.A., Bulls guard Craig Hodges asked Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson to boycott Game 1 of the 91 Finals. This was in an effort to call out racism. Now, MJ and Magic considered it extreme. They did decide to play, although they were having the conversation, guys. And then 5 years later, in 96, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf sat during the national anthem. He actually sat for a few games, but then the national press started to pick up the story. He was suspended one game by the NBA while playing for the Nuggets. He later said that he viewed the U.S. flag as a symbol of oppression and racism, opted to pray during the anthem to avoid future suspensions. And of course, in 2012, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and the rest of the Miami Heat taking a photo with all of the players wearing hoodies in response to the murder of Trayvon Martin, a 17-year-old who was killed in Florida while walking back from the store wearing the same kind of clothes as the Heat wore in their tribute. And then, of course, 2014, the Clippers staging a silent protest ahead of Game 4 of the first round of the playoffs against the Warriors, turning their jerseys upside down, throwing them into a pile midcourt after tapes surfaced of ex-Clippers owner Donald Sterling making racist comments. And that brings us to Matt Barnes, who was a member of that Clippers team. And look, your team came about as close as we've seen to a just team-wide boycott during a playoff game.
Right.
Now that you see what has happened here, do you wish you had done anything differently? Do you feel good about having set the stage for what the players did today? How do you? What lens do you watch this with? I love that we have you
right
here to tell us this.
It's different lenses. It's a completely different lens, obviously, from when I played. You know, I was one of the leading voices in the locker room along with Chris and the rest of the guys, and we decided we just didn't have enough information at the time. This was new to us and our generation, so to speak. So we decided to do the silent protest. After watching Blackballed on Quibi 6 years later, I think we could have handled it a little different possibly and actually sat out. But, you know, you can't change what it is. But I think that was the beginning of athletes talking outside of sports. You know, normally stick to basketball, dribble, you say what you want to say. But I think that was the beginning of LeBron kind of took the reins right there. We as players, once we were done, kind of started speaking on it. And that really started opening the door to us addressing issues outside of sports.
Yeah, and we see through the years there were different sort of hiccups of it and times when guys felt more empowered, less empowered. And there's a big gap between some of those years that I was just mentioning. Right. And absolutely,
but nevertheless, it's been the same narrative throughout racism.
Absolutely. I mean, Richard, if you were in the situation in that meeting this morning, what would you have voted?
Well, for me, it's always been hard, and Matt understands this. You know, we're not players right now. And so to like give your opinion the last 24 hours has been very, very tough on what they should do. The only thing that we can do is say, hey, whatever you guys choose to do, we will support you. The one thing that I will say is that the NBA has done more than any other sports team.
No question.
Any other league. And even when this Let's Go to the Bubble started, they have donated, or they have pledged to donate hundreds of millions of dollars towards you know, different fundraisers or in different communities. So they've done so much. So the NBA, I don't want to say, wasn't the enemy here. Mm-hmm. So to all of a sudden say, hey, we're done playing basketball, or I think Matt's situation where it was a part of the NBA, sure, that was a lot more of an intense situation as far as like internally. So I just felt like, you know, the players made the right decision. There is so much of a platform that is here and that has been used, that will continue to be used. And you have the ear really of the entire planet right now. Mm-hmm. So to take that away, and we knew this, social injustice was not going to stop while they were in that bubble, and it's going to continue. And our goal, and all the players' goal, is just to open up these conversations and let people know how concerned we are and that we want to see our communities and ultimately our country improve. Our country can get better. I do believe that this is the best country in the world, but I also believe that this country can be exponentially better with how we handle certain things.
And I think too, one thing, I think if we want to use the platform of sports to boycott, mm-hmm, boycott the Olympics. Mm-hmm. You mean the Olympics are where you're supposed to honor your flag, honor your country. We're going out there and going getting gold medals for our country, and they're supposed to represent and love us. And like Doc said, we're tired of being a part of a country who doesn't love us back. So if we want to make some real noise and use sports as the vehicle, as Kaepernick used the anthem as his vehicle, we need to boycott the Olympics.
That's a very interesting idea, and I'm sure we'll be part of the conversation.
I like that, Matt. Okay.
The next year forward. I mean, like absolutely, that. Right? You're wearing that jacket. Come You've on, got man. That draped over your shoulder. There's no question.
That's really, I mean, that's going to make some noise. If we want to boycott something, I mean, I think the Olympics would be the one.
I will say, Richard, I do understand as much as the NBA has done, and you're right, compared to other sports leagues, they've done a lot. I'm not sure that's the bar
still
we want to be
no.
Still just slightly
enough.
Hopping over.
Yeah. But we do
and
lead the way.
I do like that they are getting an audience with these owners. These are billionaires. They have access to all kinds of political resources. And frankly, a lot of times, some of these team owners, not all of them, but some of them are spending their money and political capital on political candidates and interests that work directly in opposition to the players.
Absolutely.
Who are making some of their money for them with their talent, with their bodies, with their hard work.
Absolutely.
So I think that the fact that they're getting in front of these owners is a great step. And I'm happy to have the NBA be the one to raise the bar. All right, coming up, we're going to talk, of course, much more about this throughout the show. We will update you on what is next for the WNBA, which also postponed games to protest the shooting of Jacob Blake. The Jump will be right back with Sue Bird and Players Association President Nneka Ogumike.
If you're watching or listening and you understand the humanity in the movement for Black lives and you recognize that your voice matters, do not remain idle. Demand that your leaders step up and take real action. Do something today.
If you want to create that change and you want people, officials in office that represent your values, you have to go out and vote. You have to take your pain. You have to take your frustration. You have to take that energy and you got to take it to the polls. It's that simple for us.
When I take that jersey off, I'm a Black woman. I'm a sister. And when I see people that are being gunned down in our communities, it's a reminder that that could have been my brother, that could have been my uncle, that could have been anyone in my family, and that it's bigger than basketball.
Live from the Wubble, I would like to welcome in WNBPA President Nneka Ogumike and Vice President Sue Bird joining The Jump. Thank you guys so much for taking the time. And you both just announced that you are, in fact, going to resume games. So, Nneka, you guys always have so many smart conversations. What were the talks that led to that decision?
Well, you know, last night I was one of the teams that was scheduled to play. Mm-hmm. And we entered the arena when D.C. and Atlanta were having those discussions. As you can imagine, it was such an intense time, and there was a lot of emotion around not just playing, but also, you know, the occurrences of the world outside of the Wubble right now and how that affects players. And we came to the consensus that as all teams were even arriving, that we would just, you know, take these nights off. And we headed back, we had a vigil, and we had a very much needed player meeting last night at which we were able to kind of flesh some things out, hear people out, and understand exactly how we wanted to move forward with the season.
So what is moving forward? What does that look like to you, Sue?
It's pretty simple for us. You know, we're kind of using this opportunity to recommit to what we came here for in the first place. And I think it's been, you know, pretty obvious. We're here to say her name. We're here to amplify the voices of the women in this league, but also, you know, women of color everywhere. And the way that we can do that in the WNBA is to play. That is our platform. That is our stage. That is where our impact is. And I think collectively we came together, talked about a lot of different things, and that's where we all landed. That's the one thing I think we're most proud of as a league. So much happens, you know, even a team showing up, you know, for tip-off and not wanting to play, and mm-hmm. we just move with each other. We adjust, we listen, and from there, we decide what's best. And that's, I think, what you're seeing now unfolding.
So you've been with the league such a long time. How have you seen all of this change for the WNBA in terms of the visibility, the cohesion between players and teams to get to this point where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said it. I think the fact that we have support from our league, from our ownership, that has evolved and continued to evolve and has been really important for us to be able to take these stands. You know, I've said recently that the interesting thing about being a women's professional basketball player is it's never been about basketball for us. Everybody talks about all these other things. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, you know, for me it's been that long, and now people are telling us to stick to sports. You know, so we've found our voice. We've understood who we are as a league. We're now being authentic to that. And what you're seeing now is real. It's the real deal.
And Nneka, as the president of the Players Association, how do you feel that the players have been represented with conversations with the league just leading up to the Wubble and then now in terms of what should happen going forward?
Quite frankly, you know, as you said, we've been there every step of the way. And I'd have to say that it's been a work in progress, especially since I've entered the league. Things mm-hmm. have definitely changed. But I do feel as though there's always something that we can continue to do better. I can say that the relationship that's being fostered between the league and its players is certainly evolving. Mm-hmm. And players are being heard more. Players are feeling more comfortable to have their voices out there, especially as we consider the things that need to happen for us to be able to play in conducive conditions while also, you know, amplifying our platforms, because that's just a non-negotiable for us as WNBA players.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Nneka. Thank you so much, Sue. Best of luck going forward. We will be following you every step of the way. All right, I'm now rejoined by Matt Barnes, Richard Jefferson. Guys, the WNBA playoff games were postponed, but really, it's not just last night that we're talking about. This movement back a few years, the WNBA players have been so dedicated to publicly, visibly. How much do you think the NBA has followed the WNBA's lead in all of this?
I think we can learn a lot, because they've always, since their inauguration, been fighting for equal footing. Mm-hmm. So if any people outside of the African American race in the WNBA can understand what it's like to fight for equality and equal footing, it's the women in the WNBA. So my hat's off to them. They've led the way in this. Like Sue said, people came to the gym and didn't feel like playing, so we all just kept it moving and supported each other. So we can learn a lot. Hats off to the WNBA. Continue to do what you guys are doing. We're watching, we're listening, we're following along, and we love what you guys are doing.
No, and like for me as a kid, I remember one of the first things that I ever kind of remember hearing about was Billie Jean King and the Battle of the Sexes. And then you fast forward and you see, you know, the U.S. women's national soccer team and all of their fights for equality. So the women have always been in the forefront, and sometimes they don't get the attention that they deserve and have earned and respected. So I love the fact that they have been so vocal, and we have supported them. They have supported us, and you've seen other sports, just like we talked about with baseball and football, supporting what the basketball players are doing inside the bubble. It's the same thing. Like, we support the U.S. women's national soccer team, and then they support the WNBA. It is all a fight for equality, and we are all in this together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and look, like every woman in the United States who earn cents on the dollar of what men make, the women of the WNBA certainly earn less money than the NBA players make, both in terms of salary and endorsements. So the fact that they have put themselves out here to this degree and have been doing it for so long, they have been risking, frankly, more of their security, more of their safety, more of their paycheck, because they have less of it. And I think that that is so impressive and a true dedication to the commitment they have.
I agree 100%, but I think what keeps them not safe, but they're together.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Just like if the NFL 6 years or 4 years ago now, Roger Goodell wants to say, I wish you would listen to Cap. I don't want to hear none of that BS. If the NFL players would have kneed with Cap, they couldn't have took everybody out. They couldn't have blackballed just Cap.
Yep.
You know what I mean? There's enough black stars on each team, but they were afraid of the unknown, and I understand and respect that. But like I said, the WNBA has always been pushing the line because they've been fighting for equal footing since they started.
Absolutely, and you heard both Sue and NECA talk about that. So impressive. All right, we got more coming up on The Jump. What is the next step for the players to take? Mark Spears and Malika Andrews are going to join us from the bubble next to give us the very latest reporting.
A lot of people kind of use this analogy talking about Black Lives Matter as a movement. It's not a movement. When you're black, it's not a movement, it's a lifestyle.
Everyone talks about it, it's all good and well, but at some point there has to be action. There has to be action, and it can't just be, I would hope this. You gotta make it happen.
If they violate your rights and freedom, stand up, cause they never had a right to be. Stand up, cause they don't see themselves in cage. Stand up, if you wanna see some help and change, stand up.
Is my life only valuable if I run fast, jump high, throw far?
I'm not going to shut up and dribble.
We will be a voice for the voiceless.
It's not a real verse, you dance.
Say her name.
Say her name.
Say her name.
Say her name.
You don't stand for something, you fall for anything. Stay away from the clowns and the negative energy. Got my feet to the ground, ain't no way to pretend to be. Got my fist to the cloud, I'm going to make them remember me. Stand up.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
And we now welcome in Mark Spears and Malika Andrews to The Jump, reporting from inside the NBA bubble in Florida. And Malika, we know the players have voted to resume the playoffs, but I would love your insight from your reporting. How close did things come to shutting down the entire season?
Well, Rachel, there was certainly a faction of players that felt that that was the way to move forward here. And those players were vocal about it. They felt in that moment that they had the only option that they had to call the type of attention that they needed to call was to stop and make a change, and a big change that could make, which we talked about on the show the other day, to really get folks' attention is to cease play. And so there were several players who voiced that and said, hey guys, what if we did this? Now, quickly, the response to that was, okay, well, if games aren't played, what are we going to be doing? And it was Jaylen Brown was one of the folks in the meeting that said, all right, everybody, if we stop play, I was one of the folks that was out on the front lines protesting before we came down to this bubble. Will you join me? We must go to Wisconsin, to Kenosha, to Milwaukee, to go and to lend our voices to that. If that's not our plan, if that's not what we're doing, then potentially our spotlight will stay stronger and brighter here, and we have a chance to make real change, leverage our owners, ask them, because they are listening right now, for what it is that we want to help support racial justice. And Rachel, when the Milwaukee Bucks decided not to leave their locker room and to protest by sitting out of Game 5 against the Magic, I've been told that the players' intention wasn't necessarily to be the thread that started to pull at the bubble for it to eventually unravel. The Milwaukee Bucks, I'm actually told, did want to resume play. They did believe, a lot of those folks in that locker room, believed that they had a louder platform if they continued to play games. But that was really the debate. Where can more change be effected? And ultimately, we saw some of that resolution come to light today.
Absolutely. And Woj has now reported that Saturday is the most likely day for these games to resume. But Mark, what is next now for players in the bubble today between now and when they do start playing again? Because they have this meeting scheduled with the team owners of the team still in the bubble. How are they going to use that access and time to these billionaires who in some cases don't support the causes that support them?
Well, Rachel, you're definitely familiar with the layout here. We're not too far from the convention center where at 4 o'clock the Players Association is hosting a meeting where they're going to have about the board and also 2 to 3 representatives from every team. And they're going to try to get together in terms of finding what is the right action, what are the right things to ask for, what are the just different measures that they'd like to bring to the owners before the owners' meeting starts at 5 o'clock. So everybody that's at that meeting at 4 is expected to be in the meeting at 5. Mm. And it's raining on me right now, and it's still cool because it's hot here. But I think what they're hoping to do at 5 o'clock is really have some action measures to bring to the owners that they could try to do some change like the Bucks did, where Lazary was able to get the lieutenant governor from Wisconsin and also the attorney general on the phone. What they saw from that is if that owner has that much power to make that happen real quick, what do the other owners, what are they able to do as well? So they're getting ready to try to ask for big change, but I don't think this meeting will affect whether or not they play again on Saturday.
Well, I know from experience down in the bubble that once you start to get rained on, the thunder and lightning is just a couple minutes behind, so we will get you guys out of that. Malika and Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Coming up here on The Jump, Stephen A. Smith is going to join myself, Richard Jefferson, Matt Barnes to give his perspective on players voting to resume the playoffs after the unprecedented events of yesterday. We are going to have a thorough discussion on what's next. Stick around.
For me, I think the biggest thing now is to kind of, as a black man, as a former player, I think it's best for me to support the players and just not be here tonight.
Welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols here with Matt Barnes, Richard Jefferson. That, of course, was Kenny Smith, a really stirring moment, walking off the TNT set last night in solidarity with the NBA's players. And joining us now is Stephen A. Smith. Thank you so much for coming back with us, Stephen A. What is your reaction to the news of the day so far that the players have decided to resume with the completion of the playoffs?
Well, first of all, always happy to talk to you, Rachel, and I'm definitely happy to see my brothers, RJ and Matt Barnes. I want to say that I'm happy that the players made this decision because I think it was the wise decision to make. We certainly applaud the decision that they initially made. Milwaukee made a move to postpone the game because they were on the phone with the attorney general and the lieutenant governor of Milwaukee. Obviously, they weren't satisfied with all the things that they heard, and they wanted to make a move. We understand that. But they operated unilaterally. Folks were caught off guard and by surprise. But nevertheless, the other five teams that were scheduled to play last night joined in unison with them, which I thought was a great, great thing because it showed the NBA to be a unified force, at least as it pertained to the players. So you make that initial push and you do what you can to draw attention to the issues and how riveting this is for you and the African-American community. But ultimately, once you take a deep breath, you also got to consider the other side. And the other side is that there's a collective bargaining agreement to honor. There's over $200 million that the NBA paid for you to be in a bubble. You agreed to participate in that bubble. You've got a collective bargaining negotiation that in all likelihood is coming down the pike that's scheduled to cost these players billions. And obviously, if they didn't participate moving forward, it would have cost them at least an additional $1 billion. I'm told it's almost worth $1 billion just for the NBA finals alone in terms of the television contract. So you know with the owners feeling a pinch, the league feeling a pinch, they were going to ensure that the players felt a pinch. And last but not least, when you think about the noise that was resonating from the players in terms of really speaking out publicly, the question was, which platform is bigger for you? While you're playing and cameras and microphone are thrusted in your face, or when you step away and you doing selfies or something? This is where the highest profile is provided for them. The league knows it. The players know it. I think as a result, the players made the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, Matt and Richard agree with you, I know, on that idea. But I'd love to hear from these guys, too, about what you think they can do going forward. But Matt, to Stephen A's point, there they're going to be in this hot white spotlight going right forward. What would you like to see the guys doing?
Continue to push forward. Continue to, call the owners. The owners need to start standing side by side with these players. Plenty of owners have sat on their hands and kept their mouth shut. So it's time for some action. But let's think about this. There's people who are paid and devote their whole entire life to coming up with a plan that's going to eradicate all this and help all this. You're asking basketball players that you first of all told shut up to dribble and stick to basketball to all of a sudden come up with a plan, backs against the wall, in the bubble, it's just going to eradicate the hate of the color of our skin. It's not going to happen. So this is a process.
Also,
that's
not their responsibility.
Right. It's going to process. It's going to take all of us. It's going to take white people who created it, all colors, to come together and figure out what exactly is the next step. So we have their attention now. I think we have to strategically move forward. But the progress we make today, we're not going to feel as adults. Our children are going to feel. Their children are going to feel. So people have to understand this is a process, and they understand that right now their platform is bigger than it's ever been, and in that bubble, their message is worldwide.
Yeah, no. I agree. You know, we've been talking, you know, on and off camera. And one of the things that we discussed was that when you start to look at who owns these teams and where they invest their money, and if they're going to invest their money in something that is completely counter to what Black Lives Matter is, or completely counter to the lives of the individuals that are out there, when you know that the NBA is predominantly Black, and if you're views don't necessarily align with those views, then that means you're purely in this for the money. And I think those times and those days are slowly starting to come to an end.
Right.
If you're going to make money off of Black labor and African-American labor and even European labor and labor that's coming from all around the world, then your views should most likely be aligned with theirs. Or it doesn't mean you can't have disagreements or you can't have, you know, different schools of thought, but you should be able to sit down with them and listen to their voices, because that's where you're making your money. So you should also be aligned with them to a certain degree.
And I would take it a step further. I think NBA has a responsibility here. And Stephen, I'm interested in your opinion on this. Look, there's a team that we think is going to change hands pretty soon. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been exploring a sale. Don't you think that the NBA should be looking more stringently at potential buyers and what they represent? Because this is a private business, and people are allowed out in the world to have any opinion they want. I want to make this very clear. You have the right in America to support politically whoever you want to do, put your money toward whoever you want to put your money toward. But I am not sure that the private business of the NBA anymore should be in the business of having partnerships, and that's what these teen owners call themselves, partnerships with people who actively put their money and support causes that directly oppose the health and safety of their own players.
Great point.
Well, you're absolutely on point with that, Rachel, and I'm sure RJ and Matt would agree. But we also have to acknowledge the fact that the players have a responsibility in supervising the process to some degree as well. If it were truly a partnership, why were you satisfied just getting your money and leaving those kind of decisions to them as it pertains to who gets to join their league? The Board of Governors, you know this, Rachel Nichols, doing the exceptional job of coaching the NBA, that you do. You got 30 of them, excuse me, be involved in that process. Be an active participant. When people are calling for you to go out in the streets and protest, if you're a player, remind them, excuse me, protest obviously usually equals progress, but that's usually for the voiceless trying to discover a voice. If you are an NBA player, you already have one. Not only that, you already have a platform. Not only that, you have access to those in positions of power to influence political figures who have the power to make the changes that you are looking to be made. So there is a process that obviously is going to be followed, but the NBA players have the opportunity and have had the opportunity over the course of years in recent memory to be a part of that process, but they haven't put forth the necessary due diligence to make that happen. Now that all of this has come about and they feel compelled to step forward and they've said enough is enough, we hope that it's not going to just be boycotting or postponing games. We hope it's going to be something far more significant than that, not just on a local level, but the state level and the federal level, because they have the cachet to do it. You can't go on social media talking about we have this power, but then when you have the power to exercise it, you never do. Because when you choose that route, you usually lose that power.
We will.
And that's what it is incumbent upon all of us to remind them of and ourselves, because we don't get left off the hook either. We're here on national television. My job, y'all job, is going to be to join hands with them for the causes that are right and righteous. It's not just on them. It's on all of us. But that's what has to be done.
I agree.
Richard, do you think that players might take this a step further and start making free agency decisions based on who is running the team that I may be potentially joining? We've talked about players in the past saying, huh, I don't know if I want to play for that organization because, say, I'm just Stephen A., I'm sorry to use your team, but the Jim Dolan team is run in a poor way or that kind of thing. Players making the decision that free agents might not want to go there. What if you took it off the court, though, and basketball decisions? What? Richard, do you think that players might say, you know what? I don't want to play for Donald Trump's Secretary of Education.
It's already happening when you start looking at what the Atlanta Dream has done, right? And they have been actively campaigning against their owner for the Senate, I believe. And so it's like when you start looking at that and seeing that the players are campaigning against the owner, you start to see that, wait, your views are your views. You are allowed, and that's the beautiful part about this country. You are allowed to vote for whoever you want. You are allowed to have whatever views. But if they don't align with your labor force and the group that ultimately makes you money, then there's going to be an issue. And so before you come and invest in the WNBA, before you invest in the NBA or the NFL, you should have a hard look at, like, hey, do my views align with them? Because what happens if all of a sudden my views don't, and now we have this issue, then you're going to have a growing problem. And I do believe that the players should have a say, not a final say, but they should have some input, because you have to get approval from the NBA if you're going to buy a team. And I think the NBA Players Association should also have a small say in that.
Let's also keep in mind that the Black players' voice is stronger than it's ever been. And there's a lot of Black money out there now, too. Mm-hmm. Jay-Z, Puffy, Ice Cube, Robert Smith. Owners have to be careful. They have the power now, but we definitely have the power now. And the newsflash, fans don't come to watch owners. They come to watch players. So if these players want to decide to get with a bunch of Black millionaires and some allies to build their own league, that's not too far-fetched. That used to be crazy to think back in the day, but in 2020, that's not too far-fetched. So I think the owners really have to kind of start lining up and walk on thin ice, because there's only a matter of time before the momentum switches, and it's switching right now.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Rachel, very important point to make. If you remember, Charlotte was up for sale. Bob Johnson wanted to become an owner. The competition was Larry Bird. And guess what happened? Larry Bird came with 13 or 14 other members and didn't necessarily have the money. But Bob Johnson had a connection with Jerry Colangelo because of their days at the University of Illinois, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And Bob Johnson, a former owner for BET, walked up in there and he said, gentlemen, I can appreciate the great Larry Bird, but here is my financial portfolio worth $1.7 billion. Excuse me, last time I checked, this was a business deal. Where do I sign? Mm. But it took Jerry Colangelo and his connection to Jerry Colangelo for the NBA Board of Governors to let him into that good old boys club. You now got Michael Jordan here. You got guys like Mark Cuban and others, Fertitta as well, Joe Lacob and others. Those guys can assist in diversifying that ownership group to let somebody else in. Stay tuned. It is possible.
Kevin Garnett.
Absolutely. Stephen A., thank you so much for joining us. Coming up later on this show, we're going to look into the mental health challenges that players are facing inside the Orlando bubble. Matt and Richard will help us understand some of the off-court factors that impact players. Next on The Jump. Welcome back. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by Matt Barnes, Richard Jefferson. Now, guys, you never had an experience like playing inside the NBA bubble, but I do want to get a little bit more into the psychology of that. Matt, as a former player, and you're someone who we're showing Paul George because he just spoke about sort of the challenges there and falling into, as he put it, depression, anxiety, a dark place. And you talked to Paul in the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like? What is it like for the players inside that bubble when all of this is happening in the world around them, but they're in this unusual circumstance.
It's tough. You know, it's tough. And these guys have families that they left behind, friends they left behind. They're isolated in this bubble. People say, oh, you make a lot of money, you do. It still doesn't change the color of our skin. We're still human. We still see everything else going on, and they're kind of isolated, so they don't understand the impact they actually have been having from that bubble. I think Marcus Spears spoke on it yesterday. Their impact has been tremendous. Their voices have unified, and they've traveled across the world. So, you know, for some of these people to understand, like, basketball is 90% mental. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Once you get on this top level, everyone can do everything. So how are you able to focus? And it's tough. These guys are isolated in a bubble, and now people are looking for them to change the world, play basketball, be fathers, be businessmen. It's just a lot, man. So we have to appreciate the mental space these players are going through and just not give them a pass because we're ready for the mission, but just have more of an understanding of what they're really going through mentally.
Yeah, and we've talked about this in the last couple of years, whether it was DeMar DeRozan or Kevin Love talking about mental health. And so many people have been like, you know what, that is right. I'm glad we're finally openly talking about this in sports. But then all of a sudden you put individuals in a fishbowl with all of the stuff going on, and we expect that, like, these guys are just going to be fine because of the amount of money that they make. Well, that's just not a reality. But when I really look at all the stuff going on, and we're going to talk about Paul George, is because he openly admitted, like, look, I was struggling. It was get to me. But this is the part that makes it even more difficult. We're sitting here crushing him for his performance. And because we're making it just about basketball. Right. And I can openly say that I wasn't taking into account what he might have been going through mentally and emotionally, being away from his kids, being away from his family, all the stuff that's going on. I'm purely looking at it from a basketball standpoint, saying, like, he needs to play better. And there is a truth
there's
to that. But there's a human side to that we all need to be a little bit more cautious with how harshly we criticize someone for their performance because of what they can be going through emotionally in that space.
That's why I reached out to him. You know, I mean, the world was on his shoulders, and I played for UCLA, the Lakers, the Clippers. When you're in LA, there's so much more light on you. It's so much hotter. And I just told him, you know, you just have to forget all that. Be at peace. There's a reason why you're one of the best two-way players in the game.
Sure.
I know Doc wants you to shoot. It only takes one shot to get hot. Lose yourself on the defensive end. Just little stuff like that, because people forget, like Richard said, it's not as easy as people want to make it seem like it is.
And I have lived in that bubble, and a word I heard a lot last night was that people are afraid. And I think that that is really F-R-A-Y-D, not frayed like F-rayed, but that you're just frayed, you're worn out. And there is just such a crushing sort of feeling day after day in that closed environment where you cannot leave. You cannot go for a drive. You cannot go for a run. You are there. So I really applaud all of them for how they are holding up, and we will continue to tell their story.